Everybody. We're going to get started. I'm sorry to be the one to interrupt your conversations. It's my great pleasure both to see that you all are enjoying each other's company so much that the dialogue is really difficult to stop, and I feel the same way about everybody who's here. It's wonderful to have the chance to be able to speak with each other, and it was great to see the interactions that are starting. I'm going to introduce this panel, though, because we've got a fabulous panel, and we want to make sure we have time for discussion afterwards. Jessica Ball is going to be moderating this panel. It's my pleasure to introduce her. She's a professor in the School of Child and Youth Care at the University of Victoria. She's worked on research, teaching, and program evaluation projects on early learning and language development for the Open Society Institute, the Aga Khan Foundation, UNESCO, for Canadian CETA. She spent 12 years in Southeast Asia. She understands equity issues from a variety of national and international perspectives. But particular to what we've asked her to bring to this panel, she was for 10 years the co-coordinator of an innovative bicultural post-secondary education program to strengthen Indigenous capacity to design and deliver culturally based early childhood care and development programs. Thank you for being with us and for moderating this special panel.
Thanks very much, Jody, and I'd like to say it's wonderful that you all chose to be here on a beautiful Saturday, spring day, and I'm really delighted to have been invited by Jody and by the committee to participate in this very interesting event. I'm from British Columbia, and it's a tradition where we have not yet struck treaties with most of the Indigenous peoples in British Columbia for us to acknowledge the territory. And so I'd just like to acknowledge that I'm a third generation Irish English Canadian, and I'm a visitor to this territory. I'm grateful to the Mohawk people for stewarding this beautiful land so that we could have this event in this gorgeous facility today. So I've been asked to specifically reflect on my thoughts about educational equity with reference to early childhood in the context of the Indigenous peoples here in Canada. And so I'd like to just provide a little bit of a background. I think that what we're dealing with here in Canada is reflected so much in this poignant statement. We will raise a generation of First Nations, Inuit, and Métis children and youth who do not have to recover from their childhoods. This statement, made by many, a consortium of Indigenous organizations here in Canada, reflects the fact that we are attempting to address some of the huge inequities that we're living with today as a result of over 100 years of colonial interventions that have resulted in the devastation of Indigenous communities, families, and educational outcomes for Indigenous children. So while Indigenous peoples here in Canada form only 5% of our population now, there is over twice the birth rate of Indigenous families compared to the non-Indigenous population. And so we have a demographic wave or cascade of young people entering the school system with over twice the number of Indigenous children entering preschools now in Saskatchewan and Manitoba proportionally compared to non-Indigenous children. And so we'll have a young Indigenous population for many, many years to come. At the same time, as despite some exciting innovations that have been reported in some primary and secondary schools, we still have over twice the number of Indigenous children failing out or leaving school early before achieving a high school diploma. And for Inuit people, it's 3.6 times the number that are failing out or leaving school early. So I'd like to reflect on some unique features of Indigenous children's experiences. Of course, we know that there are three major populations that are recognized by the Government of Canada, but in fact, there are literally hundreds, 600 or 700 different cultural groups, and there's a great deal of linguistic diversity across Indigenous populations here in Canada. It's a very rural and remote population, with over 50% of Indigenous children living in rural and remote northern areas. So, you know, access, you have to think in special ways about access to education. Now, often when we think about Indigenous children, we hear a litany of pathologies and deficits and what this population doesn't have. We've just collected data with a post-census survey at Stats Canada. The Aboriginal Children's Survey showed some of the perhaps unique strengths or assets that we could build on. One is that many Indigenous children live in three-generation families and interact on a daily or weekly basis with grandparents. Many Indigenous children are still participating in cultural ceremonies regularly. The survey asked about weekly, monthly, and yearly. Also, many Indigenous families subscribe to a view that children grow up rather than needing to be raised up. And this is a distinction that people who've looked at the socialization especially language socialization and the cultural nature of raising children, have noted has, you know, some real implications for education and for engaging parents in thinking about what children need in order to develop optimally. So, for example, the Royal Commission on Aboriginal Peoples noted that, according to Aboriginal people, children are gifts from the spirit world, and they carry within them the gifts that manifest themselves as they become teachers, mothers, hunters, counselors, artisans, and visionaries. So children are very much valued by Aboriginal peoples, and they may often subscribe to a view that if children are left more or less alone, they'll begin to manifest their strengths and talents and directions for life. Just to review very briefly, there are many different indicators of inequities among Aboriginal peoples. Half of Indigenous children live well below the poverty line. 33% of First Nations and Métis families live in substandard and overcrowded housing. There are many different health, development, and learning difficulties that are reflected in various data sources, all of which are generally understood as reflecting the cumulative effects of poverty. First Nations children have been disproportionately diagnosed with various learning disabilities, and they're very. Some people say that there are more children living in foster and adoptive homes now than there were children interned in the residential schools in the 1950s. Several investigators have reported high rates of nutritional inadequacy prenatally and in young children, and there's a persisting problem in many of the rural and remote areas with food and water contamination. So these are serious structural problems that affect educational outcomes for young children. Now, we've heard from WHO, we heard yesterday, that early childhood programs can be a powerful equalizer. At least we know that providing quality early childhood development programs can help to at least lay the foundations for early school, for readiness to learn. So now we think, those of us that are working with Indigenous populations in Canada and around the world think that early childhood is really where we need to make our primary investment. And thinking about some of these characteristics can help us understand why early childhood might be a very, very important place to focus our attention. Most Indigenous parents are first or second generation survivors of the Indian residential schools. So, and we know that many survivors have not experienced positive childhood or positive educational experiences themselves. And so early childhood programs that include parents may be a very important intervention. 35% of Indigenous children live in single parent households. So caring for children and supporting single parents and caring, providing quality care for, children before they reach school may be very, very important. There's a 7 times greater proportion of adolescent mothers in the indigenous population. And 40 to 50% of indigenous children don't have access to the kinds of facilities that we often see in urban areas that are supportive of young children's development. Also, if we think about early childhood programs in a holistic way, programs that are community fitting and culturally congruent and that include nutrition, health, as well as language development, cognitive stimulation, early identification and early intervention, and involving parents, this might be a very powerful equalizer in terms of getting children ready for school. And yet, our research shows that under 20% of Indigenous children in Canada have access to any kind of early childhood care and development program, let alone quality care programs. And an OECD report, John Bennett, reported in 2003 that less than 10% of Indigenous children have access to any early childhood program that reflects in any way their culture or their language of origin. So just reflecting on those that kind of background information there, and thinking about the objectives of our session today, there are 4 policy areas that I think we need to address to reduce the equity gaps. The first is structural reforms to improve housing conditions and household incomes, sanitation and transportation. The second is educational institutional reforms. There are many things that we could do at the school level to increase the likelihood of educational engagement and completions among Indigenous children. The third is especially to think about how we're going to provide early childhood health, nutrition, and early intervention services, especially on reserve and especially in Inuit Nunat in the north. And then fourth, to provide quality, culturally relevant, community-controlled early childhood education programs. So I'm going to focus the rest of my comments on this last, number 4. Right. So many Indigenous groups in Canada have said that they do really want to focus investments on strengthening early childhood programs and ones that are culturally and linguistically congruent with children's cultures and families of origin. So the first thing that we need to do is, if we're thinking about a program like that, is to expand the expand investments in preparing Indigenous people to deliver these kinds of programs. Now, here in Canada, we've seen an enormous investment starting in 1996 in the Aboriginal Head Start programs. And there's been a sustained commitment to those programs. But we really, you know, and it's wonderful and we're very proud of it, but we really put the cart before the horse in that we didn't think about how to really train Aboriginal people to deliver these programs. And so, in 1989, the Meadow Lake Tribal Council approached my colleague and I at the University of Victoria and asked us if we would innovate a unique training program for their community members in 5 Cree and 4 Dene communities that would prepare community members to deliver quality, culturally congruent, linguistically congruent early childhood programs both on and off reserve, and that would be university accredited and career laddered. What evolved from that is something that we came to call the generative curriculum model. In this program, all of the learning activities for community members involve them engaging with Euro-Western-based research theory and practice models, as well as with community-generated curriculum that embodies local and cultural knowledge and values and practices. And so in every course and every learning activity that the students went through, there were elders and other culturally knowledgeable resource people in every course. So that what they learned was a bicultural approach that incorporated Indigenous knowledge. Here's a quote from one of the students. Being in this program is like having the best of both worlds. We love to learn about what researchers have found about child development and such from our textbooks, and we love to learn more about our own culture and how we can use it to help the children of our communities. So over the last 20 years, we've actually, since the Meadow Lake Tribal Council initiated this, we've had 10 partnerships involving 57 different communities that have come together to partner with us in the delivery of this program, and 151 First Nations students have completed the course in their credential for delivery of early childhood education programs that are culturally congruent. When we look at the success of this program, in fact, we found that it is the most successful post-secondary education program involving Indigenous students in Canada in terms of completion of a credential at any level. And so we did an evaluation study of this program after 7 of our partnerships, trying to identify what were the effective components of this very successful program. And we identified 5 key components. One is that the students go through the program as a cohort. Another is that there's the community-university relationship, that the program is delivered entirely in the community. The students do not come to a university campus, and there's no fly-in, fly-out activity. The students are taught by local instructors and elders in their own community. There's this open architecture curriculum involving both Indigenous and Euro-Western knowledges. And these things don't all just, you can't just put all those things in a pot and stir and have it come out as a good program. And we found out that there needs to be guidance, especially elders guiding students in how to reconcile the two different kinds of knowledges and to work creatively to combine ideas to create something that will be culturally congruent and locally fitting. One of our principles is that students should not be separated from their communities in order to become trained. And so we found that 70 to 100% of students completed the program. 40 to 70% of the students completed the diploma in child, 2-year diploma in child and youth care. 11% of the graduates went on to study for a university degree. And most importantly, 95% of the graduates remain in their own communities and have introduced a number of new programs for children and families. I'll just skip over that briefly, but I'd just like to highlight this image is one that we found in so many of the First Nations communities had this as their vision for what they wanted to achieve in order to support well-being, health and development, and school readiness for young children. They said, we'll start with the quality early childhood programs that are family-involving, culturally congruent, and then gradually add on other kinds of services and programs in our own community. So a hub kind of model. And this holistic approach to early childhood development, beginning with quality, culturally congruent early childhood programming that's delivered by trained community members, seems to be a very promising way forward. So I'm so glad to be able to share our experience with this program with you, and I've also brought a number of materials that are out on the table for you to pick up if you'd like more details. Thank you.